Welcome back to the Combat Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Peacock, 4-3 black belt in Taekwondo and a martial arts skill training specialist. If you're new to the show, please sign up to the Combat Learning newsletter at combatlearning.com/newsletter. I'll send you cheat sheets on how to transform your drills into maximum skill building games and get you up to speed on the science of motor skill learning for martial arts. Plus, you'll never miss a show. Go to combatlearning.com/newsletter. to get those resources now. Dr. Garcia joins us again today to unpack the false assumptions that lie beneath the kata-based training system and traditional martial arts. He shows how early ecological researches such as Nikolai Bernstein blows up the conventional wisdom of traditional martial arts. He then spends the bulk of this episode comparing and contrasting the differences between information processing and ecological conceptualizations of how to develop skill, noting all the little glitches and hiccups that go unexamined about IP thinking along the way. If you're excited to jump in, hit the subscribe button on your podcatcher and enjoy the show. And if you're listening on YouTube, be sure to hit that like button too.
He already acknowledged that that was a false assumption, you know? It's not, right. He was saying, you know that he started by studying blacksmiths and how the blacksmith they hire him to understand how blacksmith could do a work in a more efficient way. So what he did, he in very rudimentary manner, he put some light bulbs in different joints and recorded the movements. And what he observed was that the expert smiths, they were hitting the nail, let's say, very efficiently every time, but there was variation, you know, in the joints, variation in the shoulder, variation in the elbow, variation in the wrist. But at the end, every stroke was really good. So he coined the famous sentence, repetition without repetition, and connected with the thing of the degrees of freedom, you know, the problem of the degrees of freedom. So he was saying that they know how to adapt in movement to make the perfect hit every time. So this is not noise, or at least noise in this sense, this variability is not negative. You know, the info processing approach, every noise has to be discarded because you need to get clear, perfect information. And that's why you would think with this assumption that the smith would do like a machine all the time, the same movement, pa, 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 pa. But that was not empirically true, you know? But this variability is different from beginner smiths, that they were really variable, but very inefficient. Mm-hmm. It's curious because variability can be efficient because it's adaptable. Your system is very adaptable.
Yep.
Or can be inefficient if you're a beginner, right? So what he said is, okay, they're not doing the same movement every time. They performing the same action. And here's key, you know? Action is not the same as movement. Action is a movement with a goal, a movement with the intention to fulfill some functional requirements. In this case, to hit a nail. You know, this is the action. And every time you face this problem, you solve it with actions adapted to fulfill this requirement. So you don't need to do the same movement every time, you know, but you need to perform the same action.
Yes.
That's different. That's different.
Right.
I can tell you another example connected more to sport that is really relevant as well. So, for long jumpers, you would expect them to make the same run every time because, okay, there are, I don't know, 60 meters, and then you jump just before the, you know, this wooden board, mm-hmm. and you say, okay, so they have that in their motor program. They have calibrated many times before, so they're going to do blah, blah, boom. Okay, so they recorded that. And again, they were not doing the same jump twice. You know, they were adapting, especially at the very last part of the running, they were adapting mm-hmm. to get to the precise point with the best position to jump, you know? So they were doing right. the same as the Smiths. Even in some really close skills as hitting a nail or jumping in long jump. So imagine if you use variability and adaptability in these very close skills, mm-hmm. so you can imagine in combat sports, martial arts, for instance, that it's much more open, you know? You have right. you have another person that is trying to deceive you, to try to hit you, try to do a lot of things. So you need much more variability and much more adaptability. So you cannot train through very narrow drilling, or kata approach, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. from the very beginning, it's not. A wood approach, you know. So, do you remember? I wanted to start with this image. That maybe have you seen Matrix? I guess so, right?
The Matrix? Yeah, yep.
The Matrix. Okay. So, do you remember that Neo is training and they upload a software of Kung Fu or something like that?
Yes.
And then he's an expert.
He says, I know Kung Fu.
yeah. So this is a real powerful metaphor
yeah.
that is talking directly to a commonsensical assumption of how our brain works and our body works. So mm-hmm. our brain has like a software, a motor program in this case. And when you get that, you just need to perform efficiently through your body, but all the processing and all that stuff is doing in the brain, let's say.
Right.
You know? And yeah, for me, that's a very wrong idea, but it has a lot of traction, you know, a cultural traction. And, you know, it has to do with the way we make these connections between brains and computers, as I say, mm-hmm. and it has a lot to do with how from the 60s, the artificial intelligence movement tried to build a project to duplicate human intelligence through machines, in this case, computers.
Yeah.
So they wanted not only to replicate, but to understand better a human mind. But they forgot that what they were trying to do was to replicate in a machine human intelligence, right? So to do that, they had to make, you know, all these programs and all these machines with computations and blah, 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 blah. But this is not how human brain and human mind works, you know? So right. in some sense, they impose this metaphor on the computer for us to think about our brains.
Yeah.
And this is really misleading. This is really misleading. You know yes. that in the 80s, but in the 70s, Hubert Dreyfus, a philosopher that was working in the MIT, he wrote a book called What Computers Can't Do, right? Mm-hmm. All the programmers and engineers in the MIT, they were laughing at him like, well, you know, in 5 years, 10 years, everything that you say here is going to be rubbish because machines and computers are going to be able to blah, 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 blah. No, not even in the 80s. In the 80s, he wrote a second book called What Computers Still Can't Do. You know? So, and every time they had to update these expectancies because they're falling short every time. You know, because if it was a matter of computation, forget it. I mean, no human brain is going to be better at computation than a computer. But looking the other way around, these intelligent machines still they have a lot of problems when they face real environments, human right. environments. I mean, you can be very well playing chess because this is very close environment. You have mm-hmm. everything under control, so there's no interference, no uncertainty, nothing. So, but take a look, for instance, in self-driving cars. They're having awful problems, you know, awful problems. Yeah. I'm going to tell two anecdotes, you know. For instance, a Tesla self-driving car, it had a dramatic accident. The person was kind of drowsy or I don't know, or even sleeping, I don't know. And in the road, the Tesla was going autopilot, you know, like self-driving, really self-driving. Yeah. And the car could not identify a lorry that was across the road, and the lorry had the cargo, the container was white. So the Tesla understood that as the ceiling, you know, and instead of just stopping, continue and went down the lorry and killed the driver, you know. So for the Tesla, I mean, there's no way to say this is the ceiling or this is the lorry in the same sense that we as humans, that could be like very, very easy to understand what was going on there. Mm-hmm. And we were not fooled by this easy trick, you know?
Right.
So what I'm saying is that humans, we're really good at wayfinding real environments because we're really good at doing something in uncertain environments, you know, in uncertainty, mm-hmm. to navigate uncertainty. So the world is uncertain and the humans, they just need good enough ways of engaging these environments to carry on. So the computer gets blocked by such uncertain environments. And in this sense, it operates like a very rigid thinker, a person with a mental handicap, we would say, you know, like not very intelligent for practical matters.
Right.
You know, so yeah, because computers, they really need like very neat information and blah, blah, blah. But this is so difficult when you're facing real environments because you have to specify everything. And this is not the way humans behave, you know? They just engage their natural environments through habitual ways, you know? And they don't have to be conscious every time to interact with this environment, you know? And something that is really important also from the ecological approach is the distinction that James Gibson made between information of and information about. So information of is the information that it's specified in, for instance, the optic array. So something is coming to you, and because the retinal image is changing, you understand that something is coming closer to you or it's getting farther to you. You just need that to understand what's going on and to, for instance, to avoid a punch, to parry a punch, or you just need that. You don't need to make the calculation of like a ballistic throw and this distance of these centimeters, yeah. And he's going. You don't work like that.
You're not doing a quadratic equation in your head to figure out the launch angle of a basketball coming towards you.
That's it. So the other kind of information, these the algebraic equations and all that, this would be information about what's going on there. You know, but you don't need that to really operate in the real environment. So there's a typical problem of catching a fly ball in baseball. You know, so instead of the catcher, instead of needing, you know, all this information of the velocity or the force of the impact. And the parable, and I'm going to calculate that, and I'm going to go there and get the ball. You don't need all that. You just need what we were saying, this change in the retinal image and the angle that mm-hmm. you understand if you're getting close or you're getting far. So just as long as you get that and you understand this information, you're going to get to the point, you know? And
right.
What I'm saying is that this is really what we need to get used to the use of this information, you know? And do you remember Karate Kid?
Oh, of course, one of my favorites.
Karate Kid? Okay. Yeah. So Karate Kid, this is another very famous example that is so misleading, you know? So Miyagi, that is saying wax on, wax off all the time, blah, 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 wax on, wax off. And then suddenly, magically, Daniel-san, after a while, you know, and Miyagi trying to catch him by surprise, boom, and the other block, you know, and he's like, oh, okay, the drill, you know, again, the idea of the drill. That was so drilled in his organism that from automatic mode, it came out, you know, but... But this is really misleading, and that's why.
Yeah, we're supposed to believe that the guys that train with each other, that this is inferior to training alone on a fence or waxing a car.
Yeah. And you know, this is related to what we were talking about, information of, you know, because mm-hmm. when he's doing this, the wax on, wax off, the information is truly haptic, you know, or kinesthetic, you know, because of the friction with the surface and all that.
Yeah.
But he is not getting used to the info of the optic array of a punch coming to you.
Mm-hmm.
So in no way, or there's no way that by learning to use, you know, in this movement, this haptic feedback or whatever is going to perform then when a punch is coming to him. You know, mm-hmm. it's very misleading. You know, it's completely erroneous. But if you have the model that you just need to get some through some drilling, the automatization of some movements, then it makes sense.
Yeah.
But from the ecological perspective, that's nonsense. That bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. You know?
And so what I'm saying is that
for the listeners, you said optic array, right? That's your field of vision.
Yeah.
That's, I just wanted mm-hmm. to make a note. Some of the listeners might not know that. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that depending on the model that you have, you're going to produce some training regimes that are, that are responding to this model,
mm-hmm.
you know? So if you think of the info processing, well, you're going to produce these isolated, repetitive movements, training regimes that produce mm-hmm. that, you know? But we're saying from the very beginning that this is a very mistaken way of talking about motor learning and skill acquisition.
Right.
So for instance, in expertise development. You know, there's a famous cognitive model by Paul Fitts. He was talking about three phases: cognitive, associative, autonomous. So in cognitive, you need to understand what you have to do. In the associative, you blend this understanding with the perception. And then in the autonomous, it's like you do it on your own, you don't need to think, blah, blah, blah. So it goes from cognitive comprehension to physical automation, you know? Mm-hmm. Again, for me, this is really wrong. This is really wrong. And this is like a very dualistic understanding of, okay, there's a motor program in the head. And then when you have this running by autopilot, your body is just doing things blindly, let's say.
Yeah.
And that's not how we should understand that. We should understand, instead of automation, I don't like at all this term, you know. Mm-hmm. I like much more the term of habit in the sense not as a blind thing, but mm-hmm. habit as habitual ways of engagement, you know. And these habitual ways of engagement, they have openness, they can be adaptable. John Dewey was talking about habits a long time ago, saying that this is not like a reflex. This is really adaptable. This is really with the possibility of creativity. And again, this is referred to what we're talking about before on uncertain environments. You need certain capacity to adapt to these ever-changing conditions in the situations, you know? Unless you have that, you're like a computer, like a very rigid thinker that mm-hmm. something changes, you get blocked, you know? And that's why humans are so good at it, because we just need habitual ways. And these habitual ways, they have this loose, you know, this looseness that you can adapt to novelty. Mm-hmm. But you need to, again, you need to train again in fashions that foster this, even though these habitual ways, that they can be responsive and reactive, you know. So for instance, in the expertise development approach in ecological dynamics, they would say, okay, beginners, they explore to learn. So you need to give them an environment that is rich in information of, just for them to understand, but in embodied fashion, not just a cognitivist detached fashion, to learn what the activity is about. So then they say intermediates, they learn how to explore. So they just not exploring. No, they learn or they know where to look at it or how to do that thing. And experts, they explore very, very efficiently, mm-hmm. you know? So again, for me, in this expertise development and in motor learning in itself, two things that are really important: education of attention and education of intention. Mm. These two. Education of attention is where to get this information off that we were talking about. Where's the relevant cues, information in the environment that you need for your activity? And education of intention, you need to understand the goals. So it's just not a repetitive move, but you need to perform actions. And to perform actions, you need to understand these goals. So you just have to provide that. Instead of just giving these decontextualized movements that they have to collect, you know, and put in a, mm-hmm. in a folder or put in a bookshelf. So it's not a collection of things, you know, that's not the way. Yeah. It's not the way. This can be, you know, an infinite number, let's say. It's just, in fact, Kata and all these movements, these are just collections, historical collections of different people at different times that they got these solutions. And then we're just picking all them and they say, okay, this is now the curriculum. But, you know, it can be infinite in a sense.
Yeah.
So let's see. Okay. Yeah. What I was talking about, the accumulation of files in a folder of books, instead of thinking about that is like a very info-processing approach, we should think of developing the skill as a wayfinding across a task space, in this case, the combat task space. Let me use an analogy to swimming, you know? So, for instance, people normally, they understand that somebody knows how to swim if they can perform crawl, backstroke, breaststroke, and butterfly, okay? Mm-hmm. But no, these are just specifications of a more general swimming, let's say, skill or capacity, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you have a general good swimming capacity, then you can specify these things. But it's not the other way around.
Right, yeah.
You know, so in this sense, it happens the same, and this maybe is for security reasons, that many times you see little kids, instead of fostering their natural engagement with water and flotation and going under and all that thing, many times they start really early to put all these drills and go this way with you know, doing only the feet or only the hand or blah, 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 blah. And they're interfering with their normal approach or their normal engagement with the environment, in this case, swimming. Right. So what I'm saying is that in combat sports, maybe it's the same. I mean, maybe we start really early to cut into pieces, you know, and to put techniques and all that instead of giving them what I understand that you say, like games, adapted games, mm-hmm. to foster these wrestling skills or striking skills, or you know. So yeah, I mean, in this sense is really similar to any sport, because right. Instead of fostering these general attributes or general capacities for combat, we very early on try to cut into pieces and then try to feed little by little these pieces. So we're destroying, you know, the base in this sense. We're putting the brakes on their development through that, you know?
Thanks so much for listening to the Combat Learning Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. It really helps us out. Finally, this episode, including the intro music, is produced by Micah Peacock. Thanks in advance, and I'll see you on the next episode.